Spiritual Leadership Conference 2010 presents Understanding Web 2.0 and What It Means for Ministry by Brother Jeremy Lofgren. Brother Jeremy Lofgren oversees the graphics and web department at Lancaster Baptist Church. This audio recording is a free resource from Dr. Paul Chappell and the Lancaster Baptist Church.
I oversee our media, which includes our print and our web and our sound right now and some of our video, and work with a really great team of people that the Lord's brought together here, and it's an adventure and it's fun. My family moved to Lancaster Baptist Church in October of 1986. Pastor Chappell had just been here, 3 months. The church was just under 100 people, I think, in that downtown building that you see in the videos. And I was in the fourth grade. My son now is as old as I was when I moved here. So he's a second generation Lancaster Baptist Church kid. And it's been a blessing. I in no way claim to be the pinnacle expert on anything, and especially not web or web 2.0. But I'm gonna try to share some things that we've learned, and hopefully it'll be a help and blessing, something that you can take and use for your ministry. This intentionally. I prepared this session to be a little shorter because I want to give some time for question and answer. I'll talk for 20 or 30 minutes maybe on some things that I prepared, and then give you some 20 minutes or so to ask some specific questions, and hopefully I can be a help or at least point you maybe in the right direction. So, got assigned this title, Web 2.0, and I remember back a couple months ago, I got an email from Pastor Chappell, who I'm thankful for, has a real passion and desire to communicate in all media. You know, he wants to do it with excellence in print and web and video, obviously in the preaching and personal soul winning, discipleship. He's passionate about communicating the gospel, and one of the areas that he asked me to help him with is communicating through the web. And he's often sending me little emails about things that I should check out or things he saw, things he thinks could be a blessing, and I follow up on those. And I remember getting this email that said, "I saw this book that had Web 2.0 in the title, and I think you should get it and read it." And I emailed back and I said, "I searched Amazon, and there are 1,236 books with the title Web 2.0 in them, and I'm not sure exactly which one you want me to read." But it's kind of a buzzword. It's a little bit cliche. We're going to talk about what it means and how it applies, and hopefully give you some practical things. So let's look at, first of all, understanding Web 2.0, what we mean when we use that term. There's a lot of, if you search, there's a lot of definitions for that term. And since the internet, and especially this style of internet, is kind of an emerging and changing, evolving creature, it's hard to really pinpoint a definitive definition or even definitive experts on it. But for the purposes of this session and what we're talking about here, we're going to talk about, when I say Web 2.0, we're going to talk about the popularity of websites and web tools that allow ordinary users the ability to interact and create and post content. Okay, so most of us would be familiar with a standard website. I would think most churches now would have a standard website with your contact information and service times and a map and whatever stuff that you would put on your standard website. That would be defined by a lot of people as Web 1.0. It's one person or one party, one organization basically putting up a billboard of sorts that is just communication is very one way, and it tells somebody about you. And it's not bad. It's not outdated. It's not it's not irrelevant. It's just we're talking about Web 2.0, and Web 2.0 is talking about the popularity of websites for individual people to interact with and to create and post content. And I think most of us are familiar with a lot of the very popular Web 2.0. You have, Flickr, Facebook, Twitter. We could go on and on about, and there's zillions of them and more and more created every day. Places where people can interact, and there are more structures built for end users to interact than they are stagnant sites for you to tell the public about yourself. It's much more two-way. And this revolution, this emergence of Web 2.0 has changed everything. It's changed. There's hardly a point or a piece of life that isn't some way affected or changed or a little bit different because of Web 2.0. Okay, if I want to take my wife out for dinner, I want to find a nice restaurant to take my wife out to dinner. We had our 10th anniversary a couple weeks ago. And so I searched on Yelp about the Los Angeles area about nice places to go have a date meal. And, pre-Web 2.0, I was pretty limited on the knowledge that I had about restaurants in the Los Angeles area. I had my actual physical friends. Remember, we had those before. Facebook friends, the actual people we interacted with, but now I can get onto Yelp and I've got this whole database of thousands of people who go to restaurants and write reviews, and they're not paid critics, they're ordinary people, and that is Web 2.0. So I went to a restaurant and enjoyed one with my wife that we found there. It's changed travel, it's changed communication, I think the biggest change that it's brought, and probably the most important one when you consider ministry and its effects on ministry, is the fact that 10 years ago, for Web 2.0, there was a clear line between content producers and content consumers. Okay, 99% of us were content consumers, and we didn't really produce any content. So we got our news from the 1% of content producers that wrote news, and we had a very small percentage of content producers, those with the resources to build websites or get out their message. And we were reliant on them because we were all just consumers. Well, Web 2.0 has changed all that, and now all of us can be content producers. Okay, we can post our photos to Flickr, and we can tell our friends what we're thinking on Twitter, and we can post things on our blog, and we can post video on YouTube, and we are in an age where anyone at any time is a content producer. And it seems like a small change, but it really does have enormous ramifications. Okay, it also has brought about people have more internet friends than they have real personal friends. Okay, this has some negative. I'm not here to defend or uplift or tear down this change. Okay, but it's just the way it is. Okay, you can have 2,500 Facebook friends that you interact with regularly. There's no way that you could do that with real people and have real relationships with. And people now have more tools at their disposal for spreading news and ideas more rapidly. Okay, so because we are now, we can all be content creators and not just content consumers, and because now we have a lot more networking than we did when we were reliant on actual seeing a physical person and talking to them with our voice one-on-one, that means my ideas, be them great or be them stupid, transmit very, very quickly now in a way that's unprecedented in history. Now, this has very has both a very powerful positive implications and very powerful negative implications. Okay. Most of us, I think, are at least, I would hope, at least a bit cautious about Web 2.0 and what we would say and do and post online. I teach on the weekends. I teach College and Career One class. We love it. My wife and I love it. We have a blast. We teach students who are just out of their first year of high school. And I take each year about 3 or 4 weeks and talk about the caution we should have in what we say and what we do online. And it's funny because really, when it boils down to it, the same rules, the same biblical principles about communication apply whether it's in person talking or whether it's posting online. That's kind of what we teach. So we all have at least some caution, some weariness, some uneasiness a little bit about Web 2.0 and what it can and the potential dangers there to spread things. It's a path to spread ideas, and so if those ideas are wicked and wrong and evil, then then it can be a dangerous thing. But the reverse is also true. It can be a very powerful tool for spreading good news and spreading. It can be an encouragement about. You can read about what God's doing in different parts of the country, and it can be used both ways. My point is, it's a tool and it's a powerful tool that has both positive and negative implications. Okay, so that's what we're talking about when we're talking about Web 2.0. So it's user-created content, whether it's short tweets or whether it's blog posts, video, photos. It's this interactive content creation and the powerful implications that it has. So, second part of my title. What does this mean for your ministry? Okay, we can understand Web 2.0 in its concept, but what does it mean? I think the first thing that it means for ministry, and this is not necessarily a web department, graphic department, localized truth. Okay, this is something that you should consider at all levels of your church staff and your church congregation. I think the first and most powerful truth is that every visitor to your church is, or at least could be, a publisher with influence. Everyone who comes onto your campus at any service either is or they have the potential to be a publisher with influence. So, again, how does Web 2.0 revolutionize the way we think? Well, how would you treat the editor of your local paper if he came and visited your church? Okay. What kind of impression would you want to make on him? Because everybody who walks in your door now is a publisher, and I do, and I'll talk about this in a little bit. I do Google News alerts where I watch certain key phrases. Google emails you links of, and one of them is Lancaster Baptist Church, and often Here's a blog post from somebody I've never heard of. Hey, I went and visited Lancaster Baptist Church over the weekend with my brother, and we heard the choir, and it was great. Or things that aren't great. Okay, there's both. But the thing to realize with Web 2.0 is that everybody who comes in is a person of influence now, since ideas and those impressions that you make on everybody spreads now much more quickly in Web 2.0 generation, it's important to take that into consideration, making sure you're making a good first impression. The other implication is that your church website is only a piece of your church's web presence. Now, I think it should be the most important piece. And I think it should be the kind of the key anchor piece. Okay? If we use any, if we officially use any Web 2.0 technology, if we tweet from pastor, tweet from the ministry, typically that's a tweet to draw somebody to one of the actual websites. So your website is kind of the, kind of an anchor point. And Web 2.0 can be a very useful tool to draw people to that anchor point. But the principle is that your site is only a piece, and you should consider your web presence, and you should consider what your impression is online, not just your website, but what are people saying? Are we using these other tools, Web 2.0 tools? Which goes along with letter C there, is be aware of the presence that you have or don't have on other sites. What kind of presence do you have on Flickr or Facebook or Twitter? And I'm not saying you should have a presence, but you should. If you don't have a presence, it should be because you decided that that's not strategically right for you or your church. It shouldn't just be because we haven't thought of that. And I'm not saying you have to comb through every single social website and make a strategic decision about every one. But you should give some thought to the presence that your church, your pastor, key leaders in your church have on these other sites. So, which takes us to taking advantage of Web 2.0. Here's some tools. Most of these aren't going to be revolutionarily new to you, but maybe something to think about. Taking advantage of Web 2.0. And maybe we'll look at some tools here, that Web 2.0 tools that you can use. And maybe you'll use one or two out of them. Maybe you'll decide not to use any of them. That's fine, but you should be aware of them and their potential and what they can do. First of all, And this one I strongly encourage everyone to take advantage of, and it's anytime I talk about web, I talk about this, is your Google listing. Your Google listing on like Google Maps. Google has a profile of your church as a business. You can for free take ownership of that profile. Post photos and post your service times and post information and post a link to your website. Most of the time, Google already has your church indexed, unless you're a brand new work. But most of the time, they already have your church indexed as a business, and you can get there a lot of ways. You can go to, they just changed it, Google/places, I believe, and claim your business. Or if you're on Google Maps and you do a search for your business, in the listing that it comes up, there should be a link there that says claim this business if it hasn't been claimed already. And I forget the whole process. I think they call the phone number and you enter a PIN so that they verify that you actually have, you're authorized to make changes and posting on that Google listing. But here is think about how much attention and concern and thought you would put into a full-page Yellow Page ad or something like that. by far, this is becoming much more important a listing than your Yellow Pages. We, over the last couple of years, have really, our Yellow Page representatives are not real excited right now with us. We've really, in fact, I think in this last round, we went down to just like a listing. And it might be bold, but we don't even have an ad. And here is Google for free, okay? You can, with a lot of tools, and it's a primary way that obviously the people are finding their way around the internet and finding their way to the places that they're looking for. So if they're looking for Baptist church or church in your area, that listing's going to come up, and it should speak well of you. There's also reviews on Google listing. So I don't think you can review it if you're the owner of it, okay? But your wife can, or your husband can, and your coworkers can, and post some reviews, and that helps you in your rankings as people search for businesses in that area. So you know, send a link around to your coworkers. Hey, here's our Google listing. Go on there and, you know, write a review and pick 10, 20, 25 people who would do that. It'd take, you know, 10 seconds for them to go and, you know, give you 5 stars and go, this church is great. Okay. That one sits kind of in the middle of Web 1.0 and Web 2.0, but there's some reviews and interactivity there, and it's definitely worth mentioning. Secondly, there's the tool Facebook, which is kind of the poster child of Web 2.0. It's the largest. I think the last I heard was right around 400 million active users on Facebook, which is hard to take in. 400 million. And right now we don't have an official presence on Facebook. We're going to fairly shortly here. But so I'm not saying jump in and do it right away, but think about it. It's definitely something you should give some thought to. And you can set up a fan page for your church that's, you know, to give announcements, give new things that are online, that people are there. The point is that, to me, the point of Facebook is that your membership and your congregation, your community is already there. Okay, whether we love Facebook or we hate it, okay, they're there. And for us, it's going to be a pretty. We're not going to get. You know, we're not going to have somebody answer every single Facebook, you know, request, and we're not going to play Farmville with everybody as our official web presence, okay? But we will post, you know, new things that are on our site. So I think the two ways that you can go with Facebook, and I think eventually we will probably do some of both, is to have a church, an official church or ministry presence there, or you can have you know, your pastor or youth pastors and different key leaders in your church to have a more personal presence. And you have to with Facebook, I think the big thing to consider is how much interaction you really want to have there, how much you want to be, how responsive can you reasonably be, and not to set an expectation of responsiveness that you're not able to fulfill. Okay, so if we set up when we set up our church or Pastor Chapel's account for, you know, a fan page as opposed to a personal page, I think there's a lower expectation of a fan page that I'm going to direct message you and you're going to direct message me right back. Okay, if you have a fan page as opposed to a personal page. If you're willing to put the time, resources, and effort into it and you want a personal page that you can friend and really have real interaction and contact with, I think that's great. Okay, it's just something to consider. Facebook. literacy. A lot of pastors doing this blogging. I feel bad even mentioning this after last night's message. Blog about soul winning. No. While you're soul winning. No, I don't know. But it can be an encouragement. It can be a positive web presence for you to either do some blogging as a ministry, or again as a your pastor or key leaders could have blogs that people can engage with and read, and that can often be a positive thing for someone to read the pastor's blog. It kind of personalizes them and gives them some inside thought. I've directed people who are interested in our church to go read our pastor's blog, because it's his ideas and his thoughts and short snippets there, and they can get a kind of a feel for his leadership and who he is, and it's been a good tool. We'll go through the rest of these pretty quickly. Twitter, most of us are familiar with, free service to send out short updates, 144 characters. Our pastor uses this. Brother Schmidt uses it. A lot of our key leadership uses it. I'm not a big fan. We have them here. I'm not a big fan of corporate Twitter accounts. I find them a little less engaging. And I mean, if you just look at, and I haven't looked recently at the numbers, but there's probably 10 times more people follow Pastor Chapel as opposed to following Lancaster Baptist Church, because it's a real person, and it's more engaging, I think, to come from an individual. And that was really the design of Twitter, and it's really the strength of it. And it's great to we have a Lancaster Baptist Church account. We use it, and a lot of our members follow it and update it. But I would tend to think that most of the church members who follow Lancaster Baptist Church also follow Paul Chapel. So there's some overlap there as well. YouTube. Our college has used some videos on YouTube, primarily just to have something official there if someone searches for West Coast Baptist College. We use it. It's probably the one that I'm the least enthusiastic about, because there's just so much garbage on there. You can't really control, if somebody's watching your video, you don't really know what the links on the site. You might also be interested in, whatever Google algorithm says they might be interested in there. But it's something to consider. And lastly, Flickr. Be a great thing to have a ministry photo stream that people can look at, see what's going on. Again, all these are ideas. We could go. These are four, five or six of the kind of the most popular, the leading Web 2.0, and their potentials for ministry. And we don't use every one. I'm not saying you should use every one, but I think you should decide whether or not to use every one, I think. So that's, in a nutshell, pretty succinctly, Web 2.0, and what it means for our ministry, kind of how we're using it. And again, it's emerging. It's always changing. So in about 15 or 20 years, I'll really be able to tell you what works in Web 2.0. So come back for that. And if you register now for the conference in 25 years, you can get a really good reserve seat. I hope you enjoy the conference. I'm going to break now. We have about 15, 20 minutes for questions. It could be Web 2.0. It could be general internet or random curiosities. Yes. It would. It helps in the search engine. I've studied a little bit of search engine optimization, and I think there's two classifications of SEO. there's what I would call general SEO, which means building your sites in such a way that Google can easily and accurately determine and catalog what your site is about. Yeah, and you know, not putting stuff in Flash, and you know, just little, you know, don't put your data in a photo, you know, a lot of text and photos, that kind of stuff that Google doesn't search. There's another side of SEO that's kind of the, in my opinion, it's kind of the modern day snake oil salesman type of stuff with little tricks and you know, build these, you know. Yeah, and to be honest, I'm not really interested in that. I'm not interested in tricking somebody to come to our website because that only is going to irritate somebody. Okay, it'd be the same. You know, I wouldn't put a picture of a rock band and a guy on stool on our track because that may attract some people to come visit, but once they get here, they're going to go, this is not what I was looking for. Same thing with SEO. You can trick some people to come, you know, visit your website. And you know what? If you're a blogger and you make a living by the number of views and the number of impressions, maybe that's really important. But we're not selling advertising. We're really about trying to reach people and engage our church family and our community. And that style of SEO doesn't really help us. But the Google listing is kind of a subdivision of SEO because that's a particular type of search. Typically, it's both a general search and a specific. A lot of times that listing's going to come up when somebody searches specifically in Google Maps or in your area. So it's yes and no that is part of search engine optimization. Kind of is, but yes. Yes, I meant to mention that. Similar services, and you can search on their services as well, Bing Maps and the Yahoo Maps, and you definitely want to know your presence on all of those, especially those top three. Google, obviously, Google's going to be your most important because it's, you know, it's whatever it is, 87-90% of searches. Yes, sir.
Has anyone ever looked into the little ads that are available on Facebook based on your region for a church ad? Have y'all ever done anything like that?
You know, we haven't. And it's not... I would have some reservations because I don't think you have the amount of control that I think we would want to have. And maybe we're just over-controlling, but the amount of control that you would want to have on what yours comes up under, you know what I mean, the relation there. So it's not something that we've looked into a lot, and I'm not saying we wouldn't, but it's that's kind of where we're at there. The specific Facebook ads inside of Facebook. Right, that's what you're talking about. Yep. Anybody else? Questions? Concerns? Comments? No? Yes?
Concerning Flickr, I've never used it myself. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people do. But is there a certain copyright rules for that, like pictures that you take or usually pictures that other people take?
There are. And you can read about them in their help. A lot of them are... Most of them, if they're not marked Creative Commons, are technically you're not supposed to just rip them off and use them. And even in Creative Commons, there's some limitations to what you're allowed to do with them. But if you release a photo under Creative Commons on Flickr, it's definitely more open-ended on what the user can take and do with them at that point. You really... Yeah, in a lot of this, you really have to let go of a little bit of control of what you post, because you know, in all honesty, legitimately, you're not going to track somebody down and sue them, you know, for using your photos in a way you wouldn't want. But those rules are in place. Anybody else? Yes, sir.
Do you two questions, and one goes along with that. Do you guys do anything as far as church membership, school, or what have you, as far as those individuals who maybe don't want to have their pictures posted on the church's website or school's website, as far as them somehow through the church office?
You know, we don't, but I have given that some thought. And the two things I would say, if anybody came up and said, I'd really rather you not, we'd take it down, obviously. We would, you know, we'd comply. And secondly, a lot of the photos that we're using are shots that we've set up and taken, you know. So you typically then, you're asking for permission ahead of time if you're saying, would you come in and, you know, take this shot. It's obviously for print and for web, and it's going to be publicized. And I don't think in the years that I've been doing it, I don't think we've ever had anyone actually have a problem with it or ask us not to use it. We did have once we were doing a television commercial that we ran on local cable, and we had interviewed for something else. Now I can't remember what it was. I don't think it was a local television. Anyway, it was a guy in our church who did some undercover work for Sheriff's Department, and he asked us, you know, not to make that stuff public for obvious reasons. That's the only time that we've ever run into that. We've run into sometimes where somebody's gotten upset and left church, and we stopped using that photo because of that. But we've never had anybody ask us about it. Anybody else?
I had a second.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
We run a bulletin every quarter, basically to a church membership, if you'd rather not have pictures.
Mm-hmm.
But my second question, what software does the ministry use to author the website? Or what softwares, I should say?
I knew this was going to be, I anticipated this question. It's a little bit tough to answer. We have used in the past Adobe Dreamweaver as kind of our primary website building tool. Over the past year, we have transitioned to using a content management system, and we are using Drupal to do that. And that is all, primarily that is all just straight coded. We have a couple of talented PHP programmers that a lot of times I'll design in Photoshop the site, the way it should look and the way it should work, and give that to them, and they do stuff with it that I don't understand, and it goes in the browser, and then it works. So that's...
Does that make it more efficient and more, and, you know, quicker?
Yeah, it's a little bit more work up front, but it makes it, yes, much more efficient, and it gives you some a little bit more flexibility. We can schedule things to go to post and to come off. On our church site, we can give every adult class leader has a login for their page on our website where they can post photos of their class, they can post their activities, they can post their current preaching series, they can post a like a letter or a blog post or whatever. And some of them don't use it, and we knew that up front. So it at least tells where the class meets and what time, and gives at least, you know, the teacher, who the teacher is. But some of them use it a lot, and it's been encouraging, and the teachers will stand up and go, hey, you know that activity, you know, the progressive dinner we had Friday, the pictures are up on the website, on our classes site. You can go there and check it out. And that's, and then they can download it and spread it to their friends and stuff, which is, and it also, we designed it to be an outreach tool, you know, because a lot of the times you'll be inviting someone to a class, you know, hey, come to this couples class with me, come to the singles class with me, and you can use that as a, they can look at it. So Drupal allows us to do that, make multiple logins for people, and we can regulate what they can change and what they can't, and you can create content and post within the browser and that kind of stuff. So it helps us there.
Assuming that you guys host your own websites?
We do, and there's some pluses and minuses to that. We kind of do, I should say. We have some servers here that run sites. We have some off-site servers that host some of our media and also host a site or two. We have, with our location, we have some bandwidth issues, getting sufficient bandwidth. So we've offloaded like our podcasts and audio video stuff that eats up a lot of bandwidth to an offsite server, so that we can keep things moving as quickly as possible.
Well, Larry was telling us about Vimeo.
Yep.
We're up a lot of that.
Yeah,
as
we
far
use
as the main sites. You host most of those.
Yeah, the actual coding of the sites. I think we have about 12 sites that we oversee, and I think probably 9 out of those 12 are local here on campus, which makes changes a little bit quicker. But with our connection, sometimes we've had issues once or twice a year, which I think we would have less if it was off campus. So it's a little bit of a trade-off. So, anybody else? I'll let you go, and I'll stick around if you have something specific to ask. Hope this has been a help, and if I can do anything for you, shoot me an email, firstname.lastname@lancasterbaptist.org for any of our staff is our email, and I'd be happy to help you or answer any questions that I can. Otherwise, have a great afternoon. We'll see you at service tonight.
We trust this ministry workshop session was a blessing to you. Plan now to join us in the second week of July for Spiritual Leadership Conference 2011 as Lancaster Baptist Church celebrates 25 years of ministry. Let us know if there is any way we can be a blessing to you.